Globecast Radio.
International motorsport every Wednesday. F1, sports cars, rally cars, American racing.
Midweek motorsport.
With John Hinton.
Wednesdays at 8 p.m.
It's a definitive motorsport chat show on radio. Interviews, news, you phoning, texting and emailing with questions and comments. It's interactive, a magazine show for motorsport fans that you can be a part of.
Midweek motorsport.
Wednesdays at 8 on Globecast Radio.
On Globecast Radio. Most radio sticks to mainstream sports, the stuff that fills back pages. Globecast Radio covers events that rarely make the headlines. Horses, cars and water sports. So if you're a fan, you know where to listen. Globecast Radio.
Hang out the flags and world orders on the way. Start singing now a song to greet the joyful day.
Coverage with cars and motorsport, but we're also there giving extreme sports and equestrian valid airtime. Coverage they don't get elsewhere. Yes, it's niche, but it's got a following, got an audience. We don't indulge. We cover it because you want it. Globecast Radio is cutting edge and that bit different when it comes to sports coverage, so keep it tuned. Sky 0157 or www.0157.org. Either way, you'll get entertainment and information that no one else will give you.
Good evening and welcome along to Midweek Motorsport. I'm John Hindorf and in the studio in London is Tim Gray.
Good evening, Tim.
Yep.
And as ever, a packed programme tonight, which includes what?
Quite a lot of sports car chat. We have David Brabham on. He's going to be talking about his new car in the American Le Mans series, powered by Acura, his new vehicle.
Yeah, that will be in the second hour tonight, because we're going to also talk to David about a new initiative from the Motorsports Association, the Circuit Elite, MSA Circuit Elite, Race Elite, sorry, programme, which is getting underway to encourage the next generation of British racing stars. And it's well worth listening to as well. I spoke to David about it at the Autosport show a couple of weeks ago, which got us thinking. However, our big story tonight will also concern sports cars. You may remember at the end of last week's show, we got some breaking news about Audi supplying some customer engines. We talked to Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich, the head man at Audi, at the a little bit earlier on, actually, and what started off as a quite an interesting interview about the supply of customer engines went in a completely different direction, didn't it, Tim?
Certainly did. And you'll hear that very, very shortly.
But before that, of course, we will have a bit of news. And don't forget, we've got Call My Hoof and Declan Brennan joining us live from the States with his ear on the ovals. It's all in the next 2 hours here on Midweek Motorsport.
Globecast Radio. All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
As we promised, the news headlines start things off, at least the motorsport news headlines. Tim Gray, what have you got for us?
Well, we start with some Formula One testing, because that's been going on at Jerez in Spain.
Excuse me while I go and sort of make myself a cup of coffee or doze off.
Nick Damon's been watching. Nick?
I have indeed. I've been watching John doze off, yes.
No, two very intensive days. Huge number of laps turned by most of the teams who are there. Spyker aren't there because they launched on Monday and they've been doing some limited testing
at Silverstone.
And
apparently they were the fastest car at Silverstone in the test.
How many other cars were there, Tim?
Well, there was a couple of hire cars, and I think there may have been one of the
safety car.
And there was that really ropey sort of low cylinder left over from the race school that's been crashed 30 times. That was quite close to them, actually.
We've had two days
of testing at Jerez, and the big news is it's really, really, really close.
Is that big news?
It is, really. You know how we've all been saying, this year is too close to call, there's four teams who could do really well. The last time I said that was actually before 2004, when in the last test, Brito found a new tyre, and of course Ferrari went under total domination for the whole season. But this year, it's very much like that. I mean, yesterday, we had about 10 cars covered by 0.7 of a second, and that included BMWs, McLarens, Williams, Ferraris, Toyotas and Hondas, all covered by 0.7 on the first day. And today we've had again Ferrari, McLaren, the top three is Ferrari, McLaren, BMW, and they're covered by less than the tenth of a second.
Wow.
Now, obviously
close.
Testing, you don't know what they're doing. They do have to run to wait, because I don't remember a couple of years ago, actually 2001 I think it was, Prost started topping all the timesheets because they didn't bother running any weight in the car in an attempt to get some sponsors. And everyone said that wasn't fair. So then they are weighed now. But, you know, Williams are going very well, which is nice after my little trip up there on Friday, and obviously they're now all my personal friends.
We heard that just before this show, of course, last night, I think
perhaps I was gushing too much. I was terribly excited. I remember the saddest bit of all was when I turned around and realised in the museum that they had the prototype six-wheel cars in there.
Yes.
Which I've never seen, only in pictures.
Really?
And I just turned around, I actually swore I was so surprised at seeing it.
You say, gosh damn it, it's
near
gosh
enough,
darn
yeah.
it, it's
yeah.
there.
But I did come out of there having thinking, oh my gosh, you are so sad, Nick, but hey, it's fun.
Indeed.
But actually, just to finish up on the testing, the thing that is quite interesting is that Renault aren't at the top anywhere, and Red Bull aren't doing terribly well either. So,
well, we expected Red Bull not to do well, didn't we?
Well, they got the new car.
Were they running the new e-car, Nick, were they?
They've both been out of it. They've complained. There's been some rumblings and rumours that the car isn't producing the same figures on the track as produced in the wind tunnel. But they're a little bit off the pace. Not massively, but a little bit off the pace. And I expect that having spent 3 days off the pace, they would have done a couple of quick ones just to try and get themselves up to get the pressure off them, which they've not done. And Renault aren't really setting anything alight, but, you know, that is to be expected because they haven't got the fastest driver anymore, have they?
Ah, yes, true.
There's a very strong possibility that a test session at the famous Spa-Francorchamps circuit will get the go-ahead with team bosses set to make a decision sometime this week regarding
Why?
The mid-July date.
Why would you bother?
Well, they haven't been there for a while, have they, to race? So
they've redesigned the track since the last time I was there. Last year. It's got some unique features. And also, there's limited testing this year. It's all under a gentleman's agreement now, which sounds like a future problem as far as I can see. But it's limited, but they are no longer restricted where they can test. Because previously, they were only allowed to test at Barcelona, Silverstone, and Monza, which were actually Grand Prix venues.
Their own nominated home circuit as well, weren't they?
Which that's right, Manicor for Ligier. But as long as the teams agree, they can have a test anywhere. Hence the reason we've got a test in Bahrain, hence the reason we've got a test in Malaysia. And so, because they've got limited testing, they'd rather spend the days testing an actual circuit they're going to be at, rather than spending three more days at Barcelona where we've done the Spanish Grand Prix.
Which makes sense. Meanwhile, Imola, which they're not racing at or testing at this year, has its demolition experts in there, and they've already dumped a big pile of rubble over the start-finish line.
Well, they did that quite a while ago, didn't they? They knocked the pits down.
That was
before
pit,
Christmas. Yeah, they knocked that down before Christmas, didn't they?
Mm.
But they have now laid the foundations for the new pit complex.
Just the Italian Formula 3000 is going to have a lovely new home track because they ain't getting the Grand Prix again.
$12 million they're spending on this.
They're also going
to take away the Variante Bassa.
But let's be honest about this. You turn around, Abu Dhabi has got a Grand Prix. There's one less chance for them to come back, and, you know, there's no way on earth there's going to be two races in Italy. And unless something odd happens, because Monza's one of the spiritual homes of motor racing, and, you know, it's just not going to happen. They aren't going to get a race again.
OK, let's move on to a different form of motorsport now, because John did mention last week that he thought our news was too F1 centric.
Oh, I did. I said that.
Even though the news was dominated by Formula 1 last week. But this week I can tell you that the Canadian Touring Car Championship has announced its 2007 schedule. The championship will be run over 8 weekends this summer with a challenging mix of sprint and endurance events on 4
different tracks. Can we guess the
tracks?
Okay.
May the 12th and 13th. Where do you start?
Mosport.
Mosport is correct, yes.
Yes.
Okay, June the 2nd and 3rd.
Trois-Rivières?
No.
Mont-Tremblant?
No.
Montreal?
No.
Well, I'm out of Canadian. Vancouver?
No. It's not
Toronto.
Edmonton either.
Don't know, when?
Shannonville.
Where?
Is it a street race, is it?
Is it an airport?
No, it's Shannonville Motorsport Park. They have a
never
track
heard
there.
Of it.
No, I'm going to have to look that up on Google Earth now.
It's a famous circuit. The championship says it's proud to be staging events at the world-famous Shannonville.
Famous where?
Park.
In Shannonville?
A long-time supporter of racing in Canada.
Right, okay. I must get a holiday book for that one, then.
July 6th, 7th and 8th.
Oh, damn, I think I've got 17 other prior engagements.
Hang on.
What are the other two tracks, then?
Well, where do you think they are on the 6th, 7th and 8th of July?
July. That'll be...
Begins with T.
What I said before.
Mont-Tremblant.
Trois-Rivières. That doesn't begin with T. Trois-Rivières,
okay.
But it's not. It is, in fact, Toronto.
Toronto?
Of course,
are they supporting the car?
Tramp cars, yeah.
And July the 28th and 29th.
Montreal?
No, it begins with
the C.
Trois-Rivières?
No.
It begins with a C?
Yes.
Cham...
It's not one I've actually heard
Chamonix.
Of.
Chamonix. Champagne.
It's a new circuit, so you won't have been there. It's Calabogie Motorsport Park.
Calabogie?
Yes.
Can we move on? I feel this
this
is going downhill rapidly.
Yeah, what sort of cars take part? Are they Super 2000 cars or some sort of, like, you know, strange, you know, I don't know, Chevy and Buick or something, what?
I think it's very similar to Grand Am.
All right.
But I have
what,
no
the GT
idea,
category?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, obviously now you are the correspondent. Is there anybody driving a silly name? Is the important question.
No,
there may well be.
We may be able to give them more coverage if there is. Okay, let's move on to a story before this disappears.
Oh, brands taking part include Porsche, BMW, Saab, Lexus, Acura.
Saab? What's that come, laugh?
Oh, hang on a minute, though. Have we got in this segment the new story about the new engine sponsor for Champ Car World Series?
No, that's later on.
Oh, Acura, can we do it now?
Acura, Chevrolet, Volkswagen and Honda. Okay, let's...
Saab!
Wait a minute. You see, clearly we've missed a trick here, Tim, because the championship, which last year was known as Bridgestone Presents Champ Car World Series powered by Ford... Now Bridgestone isn't presenting it and Ford isn't powering it, and Tim is going to tell you...
It's called Champ Car now, is it?
What Champ Car is going to be powered by in 2007. Roll of the drums. And Tim, it is...
According to Auto Week, Volvo.
Oh!
Another Ford Premier Auto Group, Automotive Group member. Volvo, with such a great heritage of providing
it's
racing V8 engines.
49. What's going to happen? They're going to have, you know, mandatory 17 curtain airbags in every car.
Yes. And apparently they are going to the estate car body for Champ Car World Series this year, like they did in the British Touring Cars.
That's remarkable.
Tom Walton, sure.
He's
on his way back.
It's not the only rumour. They have also mentioned Mazda.
Another Ford Premier Automotive Group member.
Which is already the major partner of Champ Car Atlantics.
Right, okay.
And Star Mazda.
Okay, yes, obviously.
Cadillac.
Now that would be a change of engine then.
Yes, because that's a General Motors engine.
Well, hang on a second though. They're powered by Cosworth at the moment, aren't they?
No, they're powered by Kevin Kovalainen, who owns.
They're powered
Cosworth.
By Ford, of course.
Well, no, the engines are Cosworth engines.
They
so you could rebrand
you
them as anything. Cosworth isn't part of Ford.
Right.
Kevin Kalkoven bought Cosworth, and so it could be you could brand the camp
cover the racing engines part of Cosworth. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So you could brand them Cadillac or Buick or anybody who's prepared to put the sum of money in. I think Reliant. The Champ Car World Series powered by Reliant.
The other name here is Hyundai/Kia, which of course is the same company.
Now that is not beyond the bounds of possibility, and Len Hunt runs Kia USA, who was one of the driving forces about bringing Audi UK into the British Touring Car Championship. He was Jaguar TWR years. He is absolutely, totally and utterly committed that major manufacturers get involved in motorsport, and that is not the silliest idea. And for many long times I have said that those manufacturers who sell a shed load of cars in the States, they sell on price and reliability with a 100,000 mile 10 year warranty. Some restrictions do apply, see your dealer for details. They need a halo product, and a super sports car, prototype Le Mans racer, or some kind of single seater program is not the silliest thing I've heard from those.
Back in 2003 there was a rumour that Kia was going to enter the IndyCar series as a engine manufacturer, but that never happened.
Well, apparently, you couldn't enter 1100 three cylinder, could you?
No.
In 2004, there was a rumour that they were going to enter a works team in the British Touring Car Championship, and that never happened.
Do you just see really back issues of Autosport? Because we could be all here all year with rumours that never happened because they made them up with those
slow
news.
Let's move on. I shouldn't have brought that forward.
They've also been tied into rumours about entering Formula One.
Really?
In time for the Korean Grand Prix.
Next.
Okay. One more story?
No, that's the news for now.
Okay, now, don't go away, because when we come back, it is the Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich interview. We started off asking him about the customer engine program, but the talking point comes halfway through the interview, and I think it's going to rattle some cages, so stand by for this, an exclusive on Midweek Motorsport, Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich from Audi Sport, next here on Sky Channel 0157.
If it's happening in motorsport, you'll hear about it on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport.
Globecast Radio's definitive international motorsport magazine show.
Globecast Radio.
If you want to know more about Globecast Radio, where we are, who's doing what, and more about the cars we test, log on to www.0157.org. Features, interviews, and reports. A website for those that love cars and motorsport. www.0157.org. The website of Globecast Radio.
Well, on last week's Midweek Motorsport, right at the end of the show, we mentioned the breaking news that Audi was about to supply a customer with some engines for a sports prototype program. It was brand new news to us last week, and we promised we'd get to the bottom of the story. Basically, the FSI V8 engine that has been sitting behind the drivers in the all-conquering Audi R8s have now been made available to, well, for the moment, one team to put into a Lola Prototype 1 sports car. We promised we would get the lowdown on what's going on, so earlier we spoke to the man at the top of Audi Sport, Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich, and the first question, as you might expect, was how did the program come about?
Yeah, it came all about because the team owner, Fritz Stalder, who was a long-term partner from Audi, decided to make a sports car project with a Lola. And then his first partner to contact concerning an engine for sure was Audi. He came to us and asked us whether we could provide him with some engines. Having some of these engines still on stock but a limited number, we then decided to use this as a business opportunity and offered them a leasing deal for supplying the car with FSI engines for the 24 Hours of Le Mans and, if I'm correctly informed, for the Le Mans series as well.
So, Dr. Ulrich, is this engine in the same specification as was in the R8 at the end of its life?
It is a specification that is similar to the one that was running in the last years, but for sure there is a different restrictor on it, because in these days the engine was very much restricted because of the change into the new rules. But the car, the engine is unchanged mechanically as it has been. As we have it, we will make it available to the team, and our support is limited to making one engine engineer available to the team to run the engine, to so other engine manufacturers that do this support in sports cars.
So you will send an engineer out to work alongside the team, Dr. Ulrich?
Yeah, we will support this with, I think, one of our guys, and also one company that is together with a company that has long-term relationships on engine with Audi. But in basically, this is just limited to the standard support that you make with a leasing deal.
And is this a buyout deal, or is it a leasing deal for the engine, Dr. Ulrich?
As I said, it's a leasing deal, yes.
And just for the engine, or for the Audi gearbox as well?
Just the engine.
Ah, just the engine. Very interesting. So the gearbox will not necessarily be the same specification as was running on the R8 with that engine installed?
We are just engine leasing partner, and the car is a Lola, and so gearbox and whatsoever is part of the engine game, of the car game, so we are not involved there, and it is a decision of the team and Lola together which engine they run, which gearbox they run.
You said that there was a limited supply of engines that you had for this program. Does that mean that you could support any other teams, and if so, how many other teams?
At present, I have to say there is no more room for any more support, because the engines that we had available, we need for this deal.
Now, this puts Audi in a very interesting position, because clearly you're going to be racing the TDI engine at Le Mans, and you will meet this car at Le Mans. And so there is the question of equivalency. Are you guys trying to prove the ACO right or prove them wrong?
I'm quite sure that the ACO has done a quite good rule book. And I think that the equivalency between diesel-powered LMP1s and petrol-powered LMP1s is quite right. And I'm still sure that if somebody is doing a proper complete project LMP1 with a fuel engine following today's rules, the performance should be at least similar to the one that we could achieve. If you think that we have done this deal to show something that it goes in this direction, I just have to say that this project starts now, and I think this is, I hope that the project runs well, but to make in this short time of development the optimum out of it, for sure it's not easy. We see it a little bit as well to support an old long-term partner, because in any other case he needed to make a rental with any other engine supplier. For us, it's an interesting new area, customer support with an engine in sport prototypes, and I just can hope that the combination of the Lola car and our engine is an excellent one. I think both parts have a big potential. If it is united to a good overall result, this could be a car that runs quite nicely and should a little bit show also that the rules are excellent done.
Now, Dr. Ulrich, you'll be effectively racing against your customers at Le Mans. Is that going to mean any split loyalties within the team?
You don't need to be concerned about that. This has never happened. because everybody knows that all these stories that have been around in the Bentley years, that Audi was enforced not to go as far as we could to give Bentley a chance. Everybody that knows the background knows that this was not true. So we would never do anything and interfere in competition. This has never been our idea, never our intention. If an Audi customer can make a good job with an Audi engine, then it is fine for Audi. But on the other hand, you know that we have a works effort. We want to win Le Mans the second time with a diesel, with the big competition of a manufacturer like Peugeot that comes with a works effort as well. And I think we should see that these things, that means the works activity and the lease supported customer project, are on completely different levels.
I wonder if we can turn for a moment to the TDI, the R10 TDI, which you will be running at Le Mans. There's a strong rumour that you are looking at running biodiesel from 2008 on. Is that possible? Will the race engine run on biodiesel?
We are all together in discussion with the fuel supplier for the ACO to be running on a diesel that is as up-to-date fuel as possible. You know that the actual ACO Shell diesel is a diesel with a high percentage of synthetic fuel, so it's one of the cleanest fuels you can imagine. And if there is synthetic fuel into it, then in general you also can replace this synthetic part by a biosynthetic part. And this is something that people will work on, but I think this is something we should communicate at the day when we think that it is feasible.
The main works effort for Audi in 2007 is in the American Le Mans series. And I wonder, Dr. Ulrich, if you're slightly disappointed by the lack of competition in the prototype one class with respect to Autocon. There's really not much for you to fight against in that category.
Yeah, I mean, we are not very happy about what happens in America. The first thing is the question mark with how many competitors will be there. And the second point is that we do not agree that the season should start with rules that are not the ACO rules. Because I think if there has to be a performance balancing, which we don't like at all, and which we think in general is wrong, but if this has to be, then my opinion is we should start from the line where the ACO had set the rule book.
You're talking here, Dr. Ulrich, about the 5% restrictors for the P2 cars, aren't you?
Yes.
Do you feel then, effectively, you are going to be racing the P2 class for the overall victory in the American Le Mans series?
This is, for me, a point that has to be discussed, because we see that if the rule book is not run like the ACO ones, if it is run like IMSA wants at present, then I think that the categories are too close together and the thing does not follow anymore the basic idea of sport prototypes. Because there you have two categories, one for the manufacturers to compete for the overall victory, and then you have the LMP2 class, which is dedicated for privateer teams without works effort. Mm. And we have a competitor that is running in LMP2 with an obvious works effort, and in addition to that, the IMSA wants to give them 5% more restrictor. So for me, the risk that we have to battle in all the races for the victory with LMP2s is given, and I think then we have the problem that when we decided to make an LMP2, we did it following the rule book that we had, which at the ACO is still valid. But
yes,
Suddenly not in IMSA. And I have to say that after all the discussions in the last 2 weeks, we are rethinking whether we will participate in the LMS or not.
So you may not compete at all?
Even at this stage, we rethink it again. So our idea is to go anyway to Sebring, but we go into negotiation with IMSA, and we will push to get a clear line on rules for the ALMS, because if not, I think we are in a not correct position, and this is something I have to defend.
Well, the situation isn't good for you either way then, really, is it?
You are completely right. We've been pushed into a really bad situation because we tried to work out with everybody something acceptable, and then suddenly, because there is a lot of pressure from maybe some companies, the IMSA moves in a direction which for us is surprisingly not fair for us.
Dr. Ulrich, even if the 5% restrictor rule is adhered to by IMSA, and again with due deference to Autocon, there really isn't anybody for you to race against in the Prototype 1 category. Corvette have the same in the GT1 category. So what's the point of being in the American Le Mans Series and racing against yourselves?
If there is no competition, we are for sure not happy about it. I have to say, before we decided to make our declaration at the Detroit Motor Show, the information that we had from IMSA is that there will be around 4 to 5 LMP1s they think will be competing. So, and this was a base, and we also wanted to give an early sign that we support the ALMS, also to helping the others to decide whether to go or not. Yeah? Now, if everything is different, that means the rule book and the competitors, we feel us in a position that we have to rethink whether we will do it or not. But I just want to point out, in any case, if we go there, we just want to continue to bring the message to the customer that a high-tech, modern diesel engine is something completely different what most of the people have in their mind. And we would just want to continue to bring the message that a diesel engine can be powerful, economical, and environmentally optimized. That means completely clean.
And very quiet
very
as well.
Very quiet. Just a real great idea for especially the United States. And it could be a sign that what in the future or in the near future could be the solution for our road customers is there racing and showing its competitiveness.
So, Dr. Ulrich, if you didn't compete in the American Le Mans Series, would you consider racing the R10 TDI in Europe, in the Le Mans Series here in Europe instead?
This is something we have not discussed yet. We still have some optimism that we find a way to make America happen and that the ALMS has a good season and that we can participate, but the surroundings must be correct.
Well, Dr. Ulrich, we hope it's resolved quickly, and thank you very much for taking the time out to talk to us here on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport,
the international motorsport magazine on radio.
Glowcast Radio.
Andrew Cotton, motorsport and particularly sports car journalist, has been listening to that interview that we recorded yesterday with Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich, which started off, Andrew, as you heard, as a fairly regular interview about this new Audi engine, the customer engine, going to the Lola team, and ended off with him sounding quite angry about the situation in the American Le Mans Series. Is that a surprise to you?
It's not really, no. They've been looking at the performance balancing for a long time. And as far as they're concerned, they want to have an LMP1 unrestricted going for outright race wins. They don't want to be tripped up by LMP2 cars. They don't want to get mixed up with the Porsches. So they want to have a clear distinction between LMP1 and LMP2. And at the moment, they don't feel that they're getting it.
I have to say, Andrew, that listening to that again, I was quite, you probably heard the surprise in my voice yesterday when we recorded that that interview with Dr. Ulrich. Listening to it again, they don't sound like empty threats. They'll go to Sebring, but if things don't work out, that will be it. They won't do the rest of the season.
It's a difficult one to call, that one. I think that America is a very important market for them. They're promoting diesel as a performance fuel, and they can't afford not to carry on with that program. If they withdraw from the American Le Mans series, I also can't see IMSA settling for that either. They will have to take steps to keep Audi happy and to keep them in. I could see Audi perhaps racing at Sebring, withdrawing from one or two races, and then going back in with a proper set of rules. What IMSA really needs to do is get a grip on this performance balancing. They need to have proper data analysis. They need to base their performance balancing on this, on scientific fact, as they do in the FIA GT Championship. Mm. They run with the black boxes. Peter Wright takes them away, has a look at them, and he can make a decision based upon engineering fact. And that doesn't seem to be happening with IMSA. They seem to be going on whoever shouts loudest, and that's a big problem for them.
Is it a surprise to you, is it as much a surprise to you as it clearly is to Dr. Ulrich, that in a season where he's expecting some performance balancing, the rules have been written for that already, but is it as a bigger surprise to you as it clearly is to Audi, that we are starting off with an advantage, seemingly, to the P2 cars?
It is. There needs to be a bigger gap. LMP1 needs to be LMP1 and going for outright race wins. There's no point looking at the calendar at St. Petersburg, Long Beach, Houston, and wondering whether the Porsche is going to win. It shouldn't. It shouldn't get anywhere close. It's supposed to be a feeder series for, or a feeder class for LMP1.
Now this is quite interesting that you say that, because this is a very different situation, Andrew, from the old LMP 675 and LMP 900 regulations, which were meant to be an equivalency formula to let the little cars compete with the big cars. Now we've moved on since that, and that point of distinction must be made. That P2 is seen, as you say, as a starter, as a trainer, as a feeder formula into P1, essentially for non-works based teams. And that was another point that Dr. Ulrich brought up there in that interview that he's quite sore about.
I'm not surprised. I mean, where are you going to race if you want to race a prototype? If you're a privateer team, do you go up against Audi in LMP1, or do you go up against other Lolas and Courages in LMP2? Obviously, as a privateer, you'd go up against the LMP2 cars. There's a lot of gentleman drivers. There's a lot of, should we say, non-professional drivers who like to get in a prototype, who like to drive quickly, who like to lap the bigger cars, who like to work on dedicated, purpose-built race cars, and they get that in LMP2. What they need to be very careful of is cost and performance, and at the moment I think they've got the balance wrong. LMP1 should be that much faster than LMP2, and LMP2 should be a cost-effective way of going motor racing with a prototype.
Fundamentally though, Andrew, does that mean that manufacturer teams like the Porsche shouldn't be allowed, that you should have proprietary chassis like the Lola, like the Courage, other people who've come along in the past, and an engine and gearbox package and off you go? But manufacturer support, are you saying, has no place in P2?
I would say that, yeah. I think that LMP1, if you are going to go motor racing as a manufacturer, you can't go up against the people like John Field in LMP2. That's not the right way to go about it. If you're going to produce a car and sell six of them and let them go, then number one, you need to come in at a proper price. You need to come in at a good performance, and you need to come in with a reliable car. Now, Porsche managed to tick some of those boxes, but the car is spectacularly expensive. Mm. And to be honest, they do belong in LMP1, and I don't think there's too many people who disagree apart from Porsche.
Going back to P1 then, in the American Le Mans series and the Audi conundrum, as we mentioned in that interview with Wolfgang Ulrich, the head, the man who is very influential, the man who really brought them into sports car racing in the first place, he is quite clear that he's unhappy about having no competition in P1, whatever happens with that 5% restrictor. Now, in fairness, you've been critical of IMSA with that performance balancing. However, the lack of entries in P1, I think, even caught IMSA by surprise, don't you?
Yes, it did. But at the same time, if you are going to have such a unpredictable set of regulations, you are not going to encourage new manufacturers into LMP1. It just can't happen. You've got to have rules where you know that if you win, you get 40 kilograms, or if you go down that route, or at the start of the season, you go through all the performance figures that you can gather, and you make a decision, and you race for the whole season. The ACO have set a maximum lap time for the GT1 cars at 3 minutes 55. What's happened with that is that people like Corvette are now looking at that and saying, okay, if we do 353s, we're going to get penalized, so let's make the car more drivable, let's put in air conditioning for the drivers, or the air-blown seats, and let's look after the drivers, let's make this into a comfortable racing car, because you'll get the performance out of the driver for a longer period of time. So from that point of view, you can regulate to a certain degree once per season at the start, run for the season. When you get to the end, you all sit down, go through all the data, and you can make a decision. It's not rocket science. You can sit down and everything is there in black and white, and you can make a decision, and that way you'll encourage more people to come in, because they feel as though they've got a hand in how the rules are written, and they can agree a proper set of figures.
I take that point, and I don't disagree with you, I have to say, Andrew. However, I think in this case, the departure of Dyson to P2 with the customer Porsches was something that caught everybody, including IMSA, on the hop. And when Dr. Ulrich says, you know, at the Detroit Motor Show, we were making our decision and we were assured by IMSA that there'd be four or five cars in our class, presumably Tim Mayer, Scott Atherton and everyone else at ALMS were counting two P1 cars from Dyson.
The decision had already been taken at the or announced at the Porsche show in or the Porsche Awards in December. I mean, Audi would want to race against somebody, but already last year they were up against Dyson, and Dyson were complaining because they didn't have the performance. And it was a question of how do you restrict the Audi, or how, you know, not how do you bring the Lolas up, it was how do you bring the Audis back, and that upset Audi, and I'm not surprised.
Vorsprung-Turk technique, made forward through technology. It doesn't fit with their ideology, does it?
What they'd love to do is get Peugeot in. At the launch of the Peugeot 908, somebody asked the question about budget. And they don't have a limit on the budget. It's cheaper than the World Rally Championship, so they're
I would think by a factor of a lot.
Well, possibly. It's cheaper than the World Rally Championship, so that was their criteria. As to the overall budget, well, they don't have one, and it doesn't matter. They will spend the money, they will go quickly, and at some point they will beat Audi at Le Mans. And that's exactly the attitude that Audi is looking for. It's a real shame that they're not going to face each other this year. I hope they do next year, although it will only be probably in Europe.
Well, they'll face each other at Le Mans this year.
They'll face each other at Le Mans.
Do you see Peugeot, even despite the fact they don't sell any cars in America and they haven't been represented there for some time, do you see Peugeot perhaps thinking, do you know, if we're really going to build a sports car dynasty with this 908 HDI, then we have to go and take on Audi in what is bizarrely effectively their backyard, to coin an Americanism, which is the North American tracks of the ALMS?
It's possible. As unlikely as that sounds, because they don't sell any cars in America, they don't have a marketing network or a dealer network or anything, it would make no sense for them to go and race in America. But when the question was asked again at the launch, they didn't shut the door firmly. They said, not this year, the car's too new, but next year we haven't decided. There may be the possibility of racing against... I think a lot depends on Audi. If Audi decides to race in the Le Mans series in Europe, then Peugeot will stay put. If Audi chooses to commit to the American Le Mans series, there's a possibility that Peugeot will go and race at Sebring and some of the bigger races.
You spoke of the Le Mans series, the European series there. I was quite surprised how almost dismissive Ulrich was in that interview when I said, well, if you're not going to do LMS, would you consider the Le Mans series? And basically he said, No, and I know that you've talked to him recently, and that's a sentiment he's echoed with you as well.
That's right. He won't do the Le Mans Series this year because there's no preparation for it. He hasn't got a marketing strategy, and he's not going to go spending money just to go racing six mm-hmm. times this year in the Le Mans Series. And I don't think the Le Mans Series organisers were particularly expecting him to turn up either. They're of the opinion that they have spent all of their money developing the television production, not very much money promoting the races. Mm. They don't have big crowds, they don't have big sponsors, but they are looking to change that this year. That's their priority this year.
And they have kept Audi out of that series in the past, haven't they?
In what way?
Well, they deemed the Audi R8 wasn't eligible for the Le Mans series when it was the LMES. It wasn't allowed to race.
I think times have come on quite a lot since then. They would like Audi to be there, but Audi are not going to choose to go racing in a series that's under promoted.
Okay.
They and Peugeot together want to have a good, solid racing championship. And to be honest, the American Le Mans Series does provide that kind of basis. It's got that potential. I think if they got hold of the rules and the performance balancing, then they could start to see new cars coming in and start to thrive a little bit again. I don't think that this is curtains for the American Le Mans Series, but they do need. It is a bit of a wake-up call for them.
Mm.
But as far as Europe goes, as competitors to the American Le Mans Series, I think that they will spend this year building and developing and showing themselves as the new place to be, as the American Le Mans Series was in 2000. And it will grow in popularity, and I could see Audi racing customer teams or with their importers, Audi UK or Audi Japan even, mm. racing in the American Le Mans, in the Le Mans Series.
Right, let's just go back to the central question here as we wrap this up. So, strife, all is not well in the Audi LMS house. If you had, and I know your lovely wife wouldn't allow you to do this, but if you had to put the mortgage on whether Audi will race in the American Le Mans Series, in the whole of the American Le Mans Series this year, would you do it?
No. No, I think that Audi...
Do you think they will miss some races this year, or do you think there'll be a standoff? I mean, somebody at one of the forum chat boards was talking about a combined P1, P2 class in the ALMS, and I think that's a non-starter for Audi, listening to what Ulrich's just said. I mean, do you think that Audi will flex their muscles and say, you know what, we've been here since the start pretty much, but this is one step too far?
It's an interesting one. I think they might well do it. From what Dr. Ulrich was saying, I think there's a chance that they will pull out for some races.
Mm.
But I don't... I mean, the big thing for IMSA is that they need to keep Audi. Audi is so active away from the circuit. It's not only a case of having the Audi R10 TDI on the track. It's also the television advertising. It's the kudos that it brings. It's everything. They cannot afford to do without Audi.
Mm.
And if they don't move quickly, I could see Audi withdrawing, but I could also see IMSA moving in a certain way to get them back.
The big problem, I suppose, that they've got, that IMSA have got to do, it's a balancing act for them. They've just got Porsche back as a prototype race team. Now, not just with Penske, but with Dyson, albeit in the P2 class. There are three Acuras, which are brand new cars in P2. Now, give Acura their due, and we'll be talking to David Brabham later on, and perhaps this is something we can bring up with him. They have said that their stated aim is to have a couple of seasons in P2, see the lie of the land, and then move to P1. So, really, they're kind of playing the game. But I'd be interested to know what you think about whether IMSA can say to those three teams, Dyson, Porsche, and Acura, we are going to take the 5% from you because we just have to, really. There's three teams there against Audi's one team. How does that balance? How do the politics of that work out, Andrew?
I think that if you're going to race in P2, you cannot expect to win a race outright. And if you buy a Porsche, and you expect to win a race outright, you could look at a place like Houston and you could say, that's my chance. If you look at other longer circuits, you have to say that you don't stand a chance. I think that's wrong. I really do. I think if you're racing P2, you should be racing for a P2 victory, as Porsche always said it was doing last year with the Penske team.
Yeah, you didn't believe that, did you?
No, you didn't believe that. Of course not. I mean, Porsche turned up with a P2 car. They got scared when they realised Audi was doing a P1, but they had to keep a hand in the racing program. And that's what they did. It wasn't a way that anybody who knows the old Porsche would have expected them to do it, but it's what they did. I hope that Porsche takes a look at it and says, well, okay, you know, we've got the basis of a P1 car. It's almost quick enough. What can we do? You know, restrict, take the 5% off. I don't think Dyson really wants to race against Audi. Otherwise, he wouldn't have dropped out of LMP1 and into LMP2.
Fair point. Andrew, sage words as ever. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll speak to you again. I'm sure this one's going to run for a little while, aren't you?
I think it's going to be an entertaining one, yes.
Andrew Cotton, thanks for joining us tonight on Midweek Motorsport.
Thank you.
Globecast Radio. Love cars, love motorsport, love music.
David Brabham joins us on this week's Midweek Motorsport. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thanks, John.
Always good to speak to you. Got a couple of things to talk to you about tonight. Well, I think a little bit later on we'll leave the racing for once until the second part of the interview. I want to talk to you about this new MSA, Motorsport Association, Race Elite, British Race Elite scheme. We've heard on Globecast Radio and being part of the Rally Elite. Is this the same sort of thing for circuit racing, David?
Yes, it is, actually. The scheme, which has been running for probably about 18 months in Rally, the Rally Elite scheme, which has been very successful in helping young drivers and navigators, they wanted to bring the scheme, the MSA wanted to bring the scheme into our type of racing, circuit racing. And I have the job to do that and help develop young drivers for the next 3 years. So it's a very exciting program to be part of.
If you don't mind me asking, how did you get involved and how come, not that I'm, but for one moment am I suggesting that you're not qualified to do this, I'll say that straight away, but how come they came to you, David?
Sorry?
How come they actually came to you to be involved in this?
Well, we went to them, to be honest, because
good.
Yeah, they went to they put tenders out, and there were three presentations to the MSA. I was one of them with my partner Don McPherson, and we went there for the day. And there was, like I said, there were three different organisations going for the same job, and you know we were lucky. We put a pretty good presentation together. Something that Don and I have been doing sort of behind the background for a few years now, where we do have helped drivers, Don more than myself, but I have helped some, and it is a keen I'm very keen in helping people, always have been, and I've learned a lot over the years with my racing, so to be able to put something back like this and to do it properly too with an MSA budget, with a scheme. We have a platform to work from, and you know we will tailor it to the way we feel is best, and it's going to work the best. But it's like I said, it's a great program, and great to have been given the opportunity to do it.
You will know possibly as well, if not better than anyone, that it's never been easy to get along in top flight motorsport. But is it fair to say, David, that it's probably as difficult, if not more difficult than ever nowadays, for talented youngsters to actually to get noticed and to continue their career progression?
That's a very good question. You know, I think life itself gets harder as we kind of go along. We kind of make it a bit too complicated. But certainly from a racing point of view, yeah, you could probably say it does get tougher and tougher, because one of the things that has increased more than anything is the money.
Yes.
And it's just getting very expensive. So for drivers to want to go out there and show their talent, it is very difficult. Now, one of the things that we have from the MSA is that we have a fairly strong guideline on who we should be working with. So these people that we're working with have got to be reasonably successful so far in what they did last year, and they've got to be racing, you know, in a good MSA Championship for this year. So, you know, it's not like we're going out and finding someone who doesn't have the budget, does about two races, and is probably very talented, but, you know, unfortunately for our scheme, we're not going to know. We have to actually work with the drivers who are actually out there doing it, showing the potential, and our role is to actually help that driver become even more complete as they move up through the ranks, and when they do get the opportunity to drive a GP2 car or a Formula One car, they're going to be far better prepared than they would if they hadn't been part of the program.
What sort of areas will you be working with them in? I mean, clearly all of these guys are going to be able to drive not just a bit, they're going to be able to drive quite well. So what are the, in your mind, do you think are the key areas that you can help in and help that development process?
Well, obviously, the guys we're dealing with are ages between 16 and 24. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things you know when you start working with these youngsters is that they've got very limited knowledge about all sorts of aspects of racing, whether it be their physical fitness. Certainly the mental side of it is probably the most important key, because to get fit, you have to have a pretty good mental state anyway. Mm. Having, you know, knowing how to set your goals, set your targets, and be able to go out there and do it and reach it. So, you know, from the scheme side of things, we've tied up with the University of Bath, where they do all the Olympic training.
Ah.
And we've got a very good relationship with them, where we'll bring the drivers up there. They'll get tested with all their testing equipment, be able to see what sort of level of fitness that they are, and obviously give them programs and nutritional advice on obviously optimizing their bodies.
Right.
They'll be working with Don and I on the mental side of it, you know, the preparation, I suppose, what not to think when you go to a racetrack, and through it, it's implanting something in their minds that they have a very strong understanding of what they want to achieve for that weekend and how to work with the team, because it's not just an individual, it is a team environment, and you've got to get the best not only from yourself but the people around you, and there are ways of doing that. And a lot of these young kids don't know that because they haven't had the experience, but we can at least show them and teach them the skills a lot quicker than they would if they wouldn't be part of it. Mm. The other thing is the technical side, because a lot of these young drivers come through the scheme, through the categories in one make type series, which is great as far as, you know, highlighting talent. But unfortunately, it leaves a big gap on technical knowledge. So what I've done is gone out and spoken to a lot of people in the industry, such as, you know, tyres. We went to Avon Tyres. You know, it's good for the drivers to go to Avon and actually have a bit more of an understanding of how a tyre works. Multimatic with the dynamic suspension in Thetford, we're going to take them up there. They're going to pull the damper apart. They're going to understand how a damper works. They're going to understand about vehicle dynamics. They're going to have more awareness about all of these aspects. Zytec are helping us out with engine, electronics, and chassis. Nick Worth, my old buddy from Formula One days, and obviously he's part of this Acura program as well. His company, who specializes in aerodynamics, are going to talk to the drivers about aerodynamics. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we can show them, and give them a little bit more of awareness, a little bit more of an understanding, so that when they go to a bigger team, they're not afraid to ask questions.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of the problem is, oh, they're worried that the team's going to say, what do you mean you don't know that?
Yes.
You know, at least that would give them the confidence to be able to talk to a team. Don't be frightened to ask the questions, because that's what they want. They want to know that you want to learn.
Yes,
you know,
it's almost like a bit of a fast track, David, because all of this stuff, as you rightly say, eventually is knowledge, eventually being the operative word here, is knowledge you would expect that class and that ability of driver to learn. But what you're doing is you're giving them a little bit of a leg up, so as you say, they can ask, if you like, an advised question, a knowledgeable question earlier, and it's basically just a little shortcut, isn't it?
Exactly. That what we're trying to do is make them as more of a complete driver, so that they'll be very confident in a team environment, to be involved in the team, ask questions, learn, and if we can give them a bit more knowledge about every aspect of a race car, then obviously we can, when they go and talk to the guys, they can actually say, oh yeah, no, I learnt this at such and such, tell me more about it, you know, and they can lead it in by that, you know. So
how do people qualify for this, David? Are you going out and assessing people, or effectively do people have to come to you?
No, we've got a website. Anyone who falls within the sort of the category as such as, you know, they've got to be British, they've got to be ages between 16 and 25, they have to be racing, and they have to be racing in a recognised MSA championship.
Right.
You know, so it's just sort of Formula Ford upwards from a single-seater perspective. But, you know, we're not just working with single-seaters. We want to work with at least one from touring cars and one from GT-type endurance racing.
So if somebody from Formula Renault, Clio, or Seat, Cupra, or something like that, though, you would look at people from those type of areas,
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We would. I mean, my role and Don's role is to pick the first 20. And then once we've done that, we have five judges that they will be interviewed with, and then decision will be made from then. It's a very similar structure to the MSA Rally Elite. That's how they chose their applicants, and that's how the MSA wanted us to do ours as well.
You've mentioned the gaining of knowledge, which is tremendously tremendously useful, and the experience that engenders is almost money can't buy. Is there any financial incentive for people to get involved as well? Is there any support in a financial sense, David?
No, obviously they've been given a free service.
Yes.
Basically, if they were to go and pay for something like this, it would not be cheap. It would be quite an expensive deal.
Many thousands of pounds, I would have thought.
Many thousands. But of course, you know, the MSA have you know, obviously decided to put something back into the sport in this way, which is fantastic news for British motorsport.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it would be lovely scenario to think that, you know, we could choose six and say, oh, by the way, here's another extra 150 grand towards your budget. That's just not the program. You know, the MSA don't have that kind of money, and the whole program's not designed around that. That's why, you know, guys have to be out there racing. And the ones who are and the ones who show promise, we're going to help them go to a higher level.
What's the time scale on this, David? You mentioned the first 20, then whittled down by the panel of five experts to six. When do we expect to hear those names being announced? And indeed, how long have people got to get their applications into you?
The applications will be will stop at the end of this month on the 28th of February. Now, already we're close to 50 applicants already.
Wow.
And I expect that to, you know, at least get another 20 or 30 by the end of the month. Then we have a period of hopefully 3 weeks is the game plan, is to go through and pick out the first 20, and then not too long after that we'll begin an interview process and announce the six.
You say an interview process that will be by this panel of five. Does that include any assessment of their driving, David?
No, unfortunately, you know, like I said, in an ideal situation, if we had a big enough budget, we would go out and assess their talents in a particular car. But, you know, we're kind of governed a bit by the rules of what the MSA have given us and budget. So, you know, it's a lot of it will be based on results and obviously how they do in the interview as well.
Well, wish you the best with it, David. And I do think it's a marvellous extension of the Rally Elite scheme, and it's about time that we had something like this in circuit racing. And hopefully, once we hear who the selected six are, we can get them on and have a chat with them on here.
Yeah, no, that would be great. That would be fantastic.
David, best of luck with that. We'll speak to you a little bit later on about Acura, if we may. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine, John. Thanks.
From the pits to the paddock, track to the stage, Globecast Radio covers it. And covers it in full. Nowhere else can you get such comprehensive news, results and interviews with the people that matter. Globecast Radio. For people who love their cars at speed. The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
Already into the second hour of this week's Midweek Motorsport, and there'll be more from David Brabham in the next 60 minutes. Thank you very much to Lauren Bellinger, who has emailed me in with the Google Earth KMZ files, which includes Shannonville Motorsports Park, which we were talking about earlier on. Thank you very much, Lauren, and I'll be having a look at that later on after the next packed hour, which includes,
of course,
I think we should. Well done, Lauren. Lauren has emailed in to studio@0157.org, and let's have your comments about what we've heard in the first hour from Wolfgang Ulrich about Audi's possible withdrawal from the American Le Mans series, anything David Brabham had to say, and in this next hour perhaps that will incentivize you to send us an email to studio@0157.org. Call my Huff later on with Andrew Cotton. We'll have him back on the phone, and we'll also be hearing from Declan Brennan, who's had his ear on the ovals with our American report. More from David Brabham, as I mentioned, but next it's a little bit more motorsport news with Tim and Nick Damon. Will rejoin us for some more motorsport headlines.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming. Globecast Radio.
All the week's motorsport news, midweek motorsport on Globecast Radio.
News part two this week, Tim. We decided to split it up to get Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich in early in the show, as it was such a big item. What have you got for us in this tranche of stories?
In this tranche of stories, we start with the news that the ART GP2 team and the ASM Formula 3 Euro Series team are to merge. And
yes,
to discuss that, is our GP2 expert, which is me. And this is the most pointless merger ever. We have two teams which have common ownership. They're both owned by Nicolas Tote, son of Jean, and Frederic Vasseur. They both run from the same building, and they have a natural progression of drivers from one to the other. People like Alex Prémat, Lewis Hamilton, and so on.
Is that a Japanese guy? And so on.
And so on, yeah. And so on.
He'll be in Call My Huff in 2 weeks.
very good.
As Nick
so
says,
point,
this is pointless, isn't it?
Absolutely pointless. Because they effectively were already, in any other way but name, they were already merged at the hip, weren't they?
Completely, yeah. I mean, it's one of those odd things. What is the point of doing that?
Very odd.
What actually is the point of doing it? To get out.
Maybe they do.
It got them on the show, though, in fairness.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Hoping to achieve more success as a single operation. Now, how successful have they been as ASM and ART?
Well, as ASM, they've won the last, I don't know how many F3 Euro Series titles. Because they won it with Paul de Resta, didn't they? And they won it with Lewis
Jamie
Hamilton.
Green.
And they won it with Jamie Green. And before that, the F3 Euro Series didn't actually exist. So that's three. All of them. 100% record.
With British people, though.
All with British drivers, admittedly, but they've got 100% record in the F3 Euro Series. Now, GP2's only been running 2 years. They won that with Nico Rosberg, and they won it again with Lewis Hamilton. So that's 100% record there as well.
Okay, moving on.
Apparently they're planning to move into Formula 1.
So am I.
I'm sure they'll be available at some point.
Yes, absolutely.
Everybody buys each other, don't they?
Got a lot to fit in this hour, mate.
Indeed. So let's move on to our next news story, and the welcoming back of an old friend. Yes, it's Wheel or No Wheel.
Oh, no, not Spiker again.
Yes, Spiker are back in the news.
You don't need me for this, do you?
I'm sure
you want
to listen. I am not
the Noel Edmonds lookalike.
Spiker will enact a unique policy by using no fewer than two test drivers on the Friday of every Grand Prix in 2007.
In separate cars? In the same car? What? Together?
While most top teams intend to give the 3 hours of unrestricted practice exclusively to their race drivers, the Dutch squad confirmed that 90 minutes of morning action will be dedicated to Guido van der Garde and Ferris Fosi. Two more rookies, Adrian Baez and Marcus Winkelhock, may also get an outing or two, possibly at their home events. It emerged at the launch of Spyker's new car.
Well, interesting, because the 90,000, I heard that the 90 minutes cost $90,000.
Well, I was just about to say, are we going to get a phone call from the banker? Because, quite frankly, that's the only possible reason that they would be doing this.
$90,000 a run. So, for 17 races, that means to do an hour and a half. I mean, I don't know the math in my head, but it's about $1.5 million.
The news hasn't gone down well, apparently, with Adrian Sutil.
I think Adrian Sutil's got a bit of a problem, actually, hasn't he?
Yes.
He's their official test driver, isn't he?
No, he's their number two race driver. But he's had no time in the car.
Yeah, and also, Spyker having 107 different test reserve drivers, there's been a kind of a rumour that they might be allowed to drive in their home Grand Prix, which means that he won't get any races at all, I don't think.
Because they've got somebody from every country on Earth.
One from everywhere.
I think he's going for Australia, and then he's in trouble after that.
There is a dispute, however, about one of their test and third drivers, Gado van der Garde. He was confirmed last Friday as test and third driver for Spyker, despite the fact that the previous day he tested in Spain for Super Guri. Super Guri insists that it has a valid contract with van der Garde, which it has lodged with the Contract Recognition Board.
They want the money.
When was the last time we heard about the Contract Recognition Board, Nick?
Last week.
Yeah, every day.
It's most recent
would be Jensen B. Button, wouldn't it?
Correct. And before that it was
Jensen Button?
Yes.
Oh dear.
I'm not sure we should actually promote other websites, but Joe Saywood's GrandPrix.com has a very interesting item on Guido, which explains why on earth this is very important. And interestingly, I like this one, because you know how I like this. Apparently, it's all down to the fact that van der Garde's girlfriend is a daughter of a very wealthy Dutch entrepreneur called Marcel Beaucourt, and apparently is worth about between half a billion and $1 billion. And it's likely that they're looking at him to actually, but he'd be Dutch. He's going to take a share of Spyker.
Ooh.
So it's all about money.
You have far too much time on your hands. You're spending too much time on the web, mate.
Well, no, it's very interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. Here you go. The ownership of Spyker currently is believed to be 32% John Mole, father of Michael Mole, of what TV company?
Endemol,
so Big Brother owns Formula One.
They also make another TV show, which
not Deal or No
which
Deal.
Is called
Oh, it's all linked in rather too well now, isn't it? Like rehearsed.
There you go.
15% is owned by a Bahrain control company. 17% is owned by Mubadala, the Abu Dhabi firm that also owns 5% of Ferrari.
Right.
And the remaining 36 is between Muller and other investors, which I think probably includes Christian Albers' father-in-law, Roel Koeman, and other Dutch guys. But it's great, because Christian Albers' father-in-law is involved in this, and if Guido van der Garde married his bird, his father-in-law will be involved in this. And which other driver got 2 years in Formula 1 because he married the right person? Shinji Nakano.
He was married to one of the
Honda family's daughters. So he came with the Mugen Honda package in those couple of years. He did F1.
As it were. And moving swiftly on. What else do we have, Tim?
Gado van der Garde said, "The only thing I want to do is drive fast." And
what's it the Spyker for then?
Well, Super Guri was the other option, wasn't it?
Well, that's fast. Who knows who's the car driver? It's a quick car, though.
The interesting thing about this is, as soon as the press release from Spyker came through on Friday, as it came through and dropped onto my fax machine, I was actually on the phone to the boyfriend of Super Guri's press officer, and he was very surprised about it, and he immediately hung up and phoned her, and she was very surprised about it as well.
Well, there we go.
They were expecting him to go there. That is interesting. Do we have any Toro Rosso?
He was testing for them the previous day.
Do we have any Toro Rosso news this week?
There's no Toro Rosso.
Gerhard Berger has said that he's not worried about being sued. And Gerhard Berger, once again, said he isn't actually going to confirm the drivers, but it's most likely to be the drivers we know. I've never seen anyone get more column inches about saying nothing than the Toro Rosso drivers.
Christian Horner's also been talking about them as well.
Well, Berger said money is not an issue. It's the performance that will get a driver a cockpit and not a hand waving a cheque.
They can't work out a way of wheedling Bourdais out of Newman Haas. That's the problem.
I think they
obviously desperately want him.
Hmm.
The other thing, of course, is that Christian Horner, who's the boss of Red Bull, mm-hmm. has said that Scuderia Toro Rosso is not a satellite team.
What? In the way that Sky isn't a satellite TV company? What are they? They're not, then.
They're obviously completely independent and have no relationship. And he's never spoken to Gerhard Berger.
Doesn't even know what he looks like, and doesn't know him.
Ever.
And they certainly don't share the same big motorhome, do they?
No.
More news, Tim?
No, we have more news later, but for now, that's it.
Midweek Motorsport.
Globecast Radio's definitive international motorsport magazine show.
Globecast Radio.
David Brabham with us again here on Midweek Motorsport. And, David, first of all, congratulations, because here we are, in fact... Here you have been for about 6 weeks or so before the season's even nearly getting underway, and you know you've got a drive for the full season, and that's a nice position to be in as a racing driver, isn't it?
Yes, John, it is. It's something that people, I think, from the outside think it happens all the time, but it doesn't. A lot of the time drivers are trying to still get their deals, and not just drivers, but teams trying to put their whole package together just before the first race, but I've been very fortunate to, in December, know what I'm going to be doing in 2007. So I have to say I'm extremely excited, one, that I've got a deal, and who I've got the deal with.
Well, I was going to say, yes, great to get it all tied up nice and early, and that's mission number one for anyone who works effectively as a contract worker like yourself and I suppose like me for quite a lot of what we do. However, Premier League, mate. This is fantastic stuff. Honda with the Acura brand in the States coming back in a very big way to sports car racing in what appears to be a very competitive part of the American Le Mans series. First of all, you must be delighted to be back involved with the manufacturer and in a prototype as well.
You could say that. Yes, it's.
There's a big smile there, isn't there, on the Brabham Fizzgog?
There has been for a few weeks now. It's extremely exciting to be part of a big program like this. I've having been in a GT car for a couple of years, I think I was starting to think that an opportunity like this won't come up again, mm-hmm. and I'd be in GT, which is not a problem, but my heart's always been in the prototypes. So to be actually back in a prototype is, well, when I first tested it, was such a great feeling. And not only that, because, having the Acura people and Highcroft Racing behind it all, it's just unbelievable. Really, I'm walking around still with a smile on my face, not really... thinking to myself, God, is this actually still happening? So yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it.
The prototypes, for those people who don't follow sports car racing very closely, the prototypes are the thoroughbred racing, custom designed racing machines. They bear no resemblance to any road car. They are built with one thing in mind, to go fast. Actually, two things: to go fast and to go fast for very long periods of time.
Yes.
And we've described these in the past on the broadcast, David, as pretty much nowadays a single seat car with bodywork thrown on them. Is that reasonable? Obviously they're a little bit heavier because of the size of the car, but the way they react to setup changes and the amount of downforce they're producing, is that a reasonable comparison?
Oh, very much so. They are a single seater with bodywork, basically. Mm. They're like a Formula One car with bodywork, and we're going through a process now, I think, in sports car racing, where we've got some big manufacturers now getting involved in sports car racing and really pushing the envelope on technology. And, from my experience in a very short period of time, I can see that these guys are extremely serious about it, and they are doing everything within their power to make this program a success. So for me, being part of that is really, really good, because I've just got a massive resources behind me, behind my teammates, behind the team to do well, and everyone's working extremely hard, but very, very pleasing to know that you have that sort of backing.
Honda, Acura, the brand in the States, it's a very well-developed brand. It's a brand that we don't have here in the UK or indeed in Europe. It's effectively their high-end brand, a bit like Lexus would be to Toyota.
Yeah.
But it does come with all the backing of HRD, Honda Racing Developments, which have got a phenomenal history of success in everything that they've been involved with, David.
Well, I mean, as you know, John, I mean, you just have to look and see what they've done in the past with their Champ Car and IRL programs. Wherever they've gone, they've dominated. They just haven't just won, they've dominated. And they are taking that mentality into sports car racing. So I see, a tremendous battle in the future with Audi and Porsche, and obviously I think that will attract even more manufacturers into the sports car arena. So I think sports car racing now is taking a new page, it's taking a new direction, one that is quite exciting, and anyone being part of it is going to be part of a really fantastic time in sports car racing.
Well, David, talking about good times to be in sports car racing, not just in general, but specifically, you have driven this new Acura. You were at the winter test at Sebring, I believe. And, well, come on then. Tell me all about it. How did it go?
Well, so far, I mean, I'd have to say pretty good. We're obviously at the very early stages of the program. And there is so much to do, so much to learn with everyone involved. But having, driven the car a couple of times now, you can see it's certainly got some potential. And I know at the next test we have some more updates. So, when we have those, we should have a little bit more clearer picture of where we'll be as far as competitiveness is concerned. But, I'm just obviously pretty pleased just to be back in one. And And I can see that with the hard work that everyone has been putting in, we are for sure we will be strong throughout the year.
Highcroft Racing, Duncan Dayton's outfit, have been mighty in historic racing. They've had a couple of years at the American Le Mans Series to find their feet there, if you like, and actually done a very, very good job. It's an interesting effort by the Acura teams this year because everyone's got the same engine, but there's two different chassis. Now, you've got the Courage version of the chassis, and I just think that's quite an odd way to go about it in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I wasn't in the decision-making on all of this, but I kind of felt that they knew that obviously the Lola was going to be a fairly good package as far as reliability. They've always been pretty strong, but with the Courage, perhaps they saw a little bit more potential on what they could do with the car. And so far, from what I've seen, I think by the end of the day, when we get this thing rolling, I don't know how much it's going to look like a Courage, but
now I've heard people say that. What exactly does that mean? I mean, how much can you do to it? Are we talking about aero tweaks here? Are we talking about possibly even incorporating some styling cues to the cars themselves, the Acura cars themselves, the road cars?
Well, I suppose. Well, I mean, to be honest, I've not even seen the new bodywork, so. We'll have to wait and see on that one. I've seen bits of it, but I haven't seen it complete. But, I think it'll be interesting to see what it looks like, more importantly for me, to see how it feels like out on the track.
But, yes, absolutely. The car itself, the Courage with the Acura engine, this is a V8 engine which has been developed specifically for sports car racing. Some thought that it might have been a development of the single-seater engine. That's not the case. How does it go as a package? Because it's a marriage between a works team and a customer team, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, obviously we've got the three teams, and the engine is the first in-house built engine at HPD. They're obviously extremely proud of it, and they know they've got a lot of work to be done, and the Fernandez team is the team that's doing a lot of the engine development, while our team is doing a lot of the chassis development. and which is Highcroft, and you mentioned Highcroft. I mean, yes, I mean, they've done a fantastic job over the years, and you know, last year at Petite they did a great job at finishing third overall, which was a great achievement. And you know, we are the development team, and we've got the Andretti Green guys who are going to, you know, have the best of everything that we can give them, and they're going to be a very strong package as well.
Emma, who's a regular listener to the show and a big Stefan Johansson fan, would have my guts for garters if I didn't ask you about Stefan. He's a bright young driver, I think you'd say, wouldn't you? he's got real potential, I've heard.
Yeah,
have you worked with him before?
He's done a bit in his life.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
I mean, having Stefan on board is fantastic. I've driven with him before. In the Zytec and in a Ferrari 333.
Of course you have, yes.
And, I mean, we get on extremely well. I mean, we just seem to enjoy each other's company, which is great. The other thing is that, you know, the guy has had so much experience and, you know, years in Formula One at top level and sports cars, and, you know, he comes with a lot of experience with the team. And he's a good team player too. You know, he's very much trying to make everyone work as a unit, because he's run teams himself, so
yes.
He knows how important that is. So, you know, I'm looking forward to racing the whole season with him. We're going to have a great laugh, but also, you know, both of us are pretty serious about it as well, and you know, we want to win. So, you know, that desire is still very strong in him and me. So it makes for a great pairing. But you know, obviously, we have Duncan Dayton in the car as well.
Yeah. No mean driver, Duncan, and that's not, you know, let's not make any bones about it.
You know, the guy is not a professional. He is, I suppose, classified as more of an amateur, but also semi-pro. But I tell you, that guy stands on the gas. He really does. I mean, and you can tell, obviously, you know, a lot of these guys who are out of the cars, they take about half a day to get up to speed. Duncan takes about one lap and he is right there.
Excellent.
I have to say, I've been extremely impressed. I'm not saying that because he's my team boss. I'm generally saying the guy stands on the gas, and he's going to be a strong driver for us at Sebring, that is for sure.
Let's not forget how he was pedalling the little Lola 675 car a couple of years ago in the American Le Mans Series. He was mighty in
last
that.
Year. I mean, last year he was quicker than Mimmo Gidley and who was the other guy with him? Romero, or what's his name? Do you remember, John?
Yes.
Come on, John.
You've
him to go out there and push himself, you know, in a physical sense to be able to try and match us out there, and that's perfect. That's exactly what we need.
Now, I know you didn't hear this interview. Ulrich of Audi is a bit cheesed off that the P2 cars haven't been given the 5% restrictor reduction that the cars would have to run at. They're thinking about not competing. As far as Acura's concerned, in fairness, they are looking at this P2 program as a stepping stone to P1, very much so indeed, aren't they?
Well, that's a question for Acura, not perhaps me, but I know for sure that they're taking the program very seriously, and they are winners. They want to win, so
yeah.
I mean, I would imagine that they would want to move up and challenge the best and beat the best, and that is Audi. You know, I think there's perhaps a little bit too much talk that goes on within our series. About what is right and what is wrong about it, and you know, I think, you know, the manufacturers do have, I think perhaps a little bit too much power in it, because that's where the money is, and you know, the organisers sometimes you know, back down very quickly when one of these guys flex their muscles. But you know, at the end of the day, it's racing, and you know, let's go out there and get on with it.
As far as you're concerned, David, are you racing to win P2, or are you racing to win races overall for Acura and for Highcroft?
Well, I mean, obviously, winning races in P2 is obviously a priority. If I mean, John, you know what we're like. I mean, if we get a sniff of beating Audi, I mean, you only have to look at Jan and I in the past, and I'm sure Stefan's going to be the same. or any of the other drivers that we have in our Acura family, that you know, we're going to be wanting to go for the outright and you know, rub their noses in it. But you know, we'll have to wait and see. You know, we may not be as competitive as we'd like to begin with, but you know, I'll guarantee you that, you know, by the time we get to the end of the season, we'll be really strong.
The P2 category in itself is certainly going to be one to watch. You've got Dyson with the two new Porsches, Penske with two cars that are kind of new to them because they've got the upgraded cars, the three Acuras, plus Intersport, of course, in there as well. Talk of possibly a fifth Spider coming along in the year. So, eight cars, seven cars there, which are brand new to new teams. It's, you know, just picking up points. Oh, and the BK Mazda as well with Ben Devlin in that with the Lola chassis.
Yeah.
So there are eight brand new cars. I knew there was. Just picking up points, David. Getting on the podium is going to be in P2. It's going to be actually a hell of a task, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. We have to fight. I mean, the whole season is going to be a massive fight out there for a podium spot, which is, you know, is what we want to go racing. You know, we want to go racing in that type of environment, and you know, sports car racing goes round in its cycles, and I said that earlier that you know, we go through these cycles, but now we're going through an upward spiral, I would imagine, and it's going to be fierce competition, I think. Certainly, you know, if Audi's gone into the distance, you know, I don't think the cameras are going to be picking them up much because all the action is going to be just behind them.
I think you're absolutely right. Now, you mentioned the Acura family earlier on. Is there a good family spirit? Clearly, once you get on the track, you want the first people you want to beat are the people with the same or similar equipment. So the battle to be first Acura is going to be pretty hot. But other than that, teams are sharing data. You mentioned you doing development work and then passing on some of the chassis development work to Andretti Green Racing. So is it sort of share and share alike, David?
It is. I think most people, well, everyone, I think, has gone into this program under the same mindset, and that is that it's a long-term program.
Mm.
They obviously would like to do well in the first race, and obviously finishing the race would be a success.
Well, particularly at Sebring.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, everyone realises the task ahead, and the best way forward is for the teams to work together. I mean, obviously, the teams are teams, and there's going to be some holding back. But I think on you know, the major stuff, which HPD and you know, the development side of the program, yeah, for sure, that is, you know, well spoken out, you know, within the teams. You know, of course, I've been doing with Stefan, you know, quite a bit of some of the development work, and you know, we're always talking to. Not necessarily, obviously, Fernandez, because they're in a Lola, so it's a bit of a different deal, but
sure.
Andretti Green and ourselves, you know, talk very freely about the changes that we've made and what they've done and how they've helped the car. And,
great.
You know, it's all about making the family work.
David, congratulations on getting the drive. I'm sure you will repair their confidence many times over. I'll see you at Sebring.
That's the plan, yes.
I'll see you at Sebring.
Yeah, no, I look forward to it.
Best to Lisa and the family, and don't forget you can hear the American Le Mans series, the only place on TV or radio that you'll get every single race live and for free is here on the Sky Channel 0157 at Globecast at www.0157.org. David, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Globecast Radio.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
And joining us from the United States of America, live by the magic of telephone, is our Ear on the Oval correspondent, Declan Brennan. Evening, Dex.
Good evening to you, and good afternoon my time.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it could be anything, couldn't it, depending on where people are listening?
It certainly could.
Just before we get into motorsport, can I just say, what happened to the Bears? I mean, literally threw it away. In the last quarter.
He couldn't throw the ball in the sea, Rex Grossman. He's rubbish.
I did and tell you that the Colts would win, though, didn't I?
Well, the whole of... I'll tell you what was far more interesting. Luckily, you had the best half-time show I've ever seen at a Super Bowl. and I've seen a lot of them. Prince was magnificent. And we had some very interesting commercials. One in featuring both Dale Jr. and Johnny O'Connell singing in the same ad.
Quarter Timer. That was the first Quarter Time ad, which was a GM ad.
Yes.
And Johnny O alongside Dale Earnhardt Jr. How fantastic is that?
I've been
bringing them on series.
Mary J. Blige and various others.
What is she racing?
I was going to say, is she driving for Acura this year?
No, she'll be with Drayle Buick. And Reinhardt or someone. Right.
And actually, speaking of Earnhardt Jr., he said trying to really really shoehorn this in.
Well, you don't have to, because we can talk about Cirque du Soleil and the appalling TV coverage of it.
Of Cirque du Soleil?
Yes.
Still at the Royal Albert Hall until the end of the week, by the way.
Every time they cut to them, they were landing. One of their
they were.
Was landing
they,
on
they every never single cut was 2 seconds too late.
Yeah, absolutely. I was screaming at the TV. It's like, because it was actually, as opening ceremonies go, it was pretty good.
Well, can I just say,
I'm
if
sure
you
it was
think
great for the people in the arena.
If you think
it
you were screaming,
look like anything on telly.
You think you were screaming at the television. Imagine what my beautiful wife Eve was doing, as she was the first person to book Cirque du Soleil in the UK, and took a chance on them with, I think it was Harvey Goldsmith who promoted them at the Royal Albert Hall. So what is the proposition here? It's a circus but without animals. Okay. So she was really screaming at the telly. Anyway, Earnhardt. Let's start off with Earnhardt. Relishing the chance to get back into racing this weekend with the non-championship Budweiser Shootout.
Yeah.
He says, the shootout is a great way to start the season. It's fun, he said.
It is.
Yeah, the winner gets more than $200,000. You shouldn't be able to earn that much money in that short a set time, and it be easy, he said.
It is quite a short time, and we'll come on to that in a moment. But first of all, I think we should talk about who is taking part in the Bud Shootout and why.
Auburn decks to people who earned a pole last year and...
And also to last year's champion, if he hadn't got a pole.
Yes.
And to previous Bud Shootout winners.
Yeah.
Right,
so,
okay. So who's in it then?
I can very quickly run through who's...
Oh, that means Boris Sedd's in it, because he got a pole.
He'll be near the bottom of the list, because it's going to be alphabetical, isn't it?
We have talked about this about 19 times already in the
I'd forgotten, sorry.
But it's one of the reasons it's quite exciting that I'll be rushing home. I've got an appointment on Saturday night, and I'll be rushing home to make sure I'm in front of the television at 8 o'clock to watch it.
The actual shooter doesn't start till 8:30, of course.
Yeah, but that's what we need a bit of build-up, and we need a bit of Jaws, because at least we get Darryl Waltrip. So Jeff Burton, Kurt Busch, Greg Biffle, Casey Kane, Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, Elliot Sadler, Scott Riggs, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Newman. Denny Hamlin, of course, the reigning champion. Boris Sedd, Kevin Harvick, Jeff Gordon, David Gilliland, and Brian Vickers all had poles last year.
Mm-hmm.
Other people who automatically qualify as past champions are Dale Jarrett,
right.
Dale Jr.
Yep. Past
Dale
champions
Jarrett.
Of this race, past winners of this race, or past champions in the Cup Series?
No, past winners of this race.
Okay, sorry, yes, go on.
So, because Jarrett... Dale Jarrett and Earnhardt, Tony Stewart, Mark Martin, Ken Schrader, and Bill Elliott. So Bill Elliott will be wheeled out of retirement again. And Terry DeBonte also, of course, because he won 22 years ago in 1985.
How fantastic!
But he's
decided not to take part, hasn't he?
Absolutely. So I'll be screaming for Borsett, and I'll be hoping that when the draw is made, because they draw lots for the for starting positions, I'm just praying that Boris gets on the front row.
You mentioned Brian Vickers there, didn't you?
Yes, he did.
Which is very interesting, because Brian Vickers will be racing a Toyota.
Yes. As will Dale Jarrett, presumably, as well,
yes.
Right?
So we will have our first glimpse of Toyotas racing.
Dex, you mentioned those drivers in the different order of the ones on my list. Did you mention David Gilliland?
Yes, he did.
Okay. I was ticking them off as he was going down. So what's the format then? It's two races, isn't it? The first bit is really just bump and run, isn't it?
It's tediously complex with no reason to be. It's 70 laps. The first 20 laps are separate, who knows why. they get, I think it's 10 to 15 minute break, they can't touch the car.
10 minutes. No, no, you can, in that 10 minute break, it's basically about setup. What it sounds like to me, you get the 20 lap sprint, a 10 minute pause, and you can do any adjustments, normal type pit stop adjustments. So you can swap the tyres, you can make a wedge or a shocker or an air pressure adjustment. So you can do that. And then is it 50 laps the last bit, mate?
It's 50, but there's a mandatory pit stop in the 50 laps, the last 50 laps. But they'll probably come in anyway, because I'm sure it'll be, then we might have the odd incident.
It's normally strewn with incidents, isn't it?
It can be, yes. And although it's a pretty exciting race, it's effectively, like in Nextel Cup terms, it's an absolute sprint. So it's normally good fun. Denny Hamlin, as he said, won last year.
As a rookie, of course.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. He didn't really use it as a launch pad I'm saying that he was third in the championship, but he only won twice for then in the rest of the season. That was both times was at Pocono. But so you can see unusual people could win. So obviously Boris is in with a strong possibility of winning. Peculiar pervert in me wants to see a Toyota win, because I would love to see the reaction from the public to a Toyota winning first time out.
The sky's falling in!
Yes. Well, there's already a website set up to fans against... It's FART, it's F-A-R-T, but basically it's a lot of fans who don't think that,
fans against racing Toyotas.
That's exactly what it is. Why did I not think of that? And I've been on their website to have a look and look to check their message boards, and it is very funny. It's basically people who are moaning about the fact that it's outrageous that these foreign companies are coming in. These are the same people who are probably going home to watch the Bud shootout on their Sony TV.
No, certainly not. They'll be watching it on a great American-made TV.
Or they'll be delighted to see the Gin Racing Organisation sponsored by Panasonic, or the Ryan Newman fans, who's also sponsored by Sony. So it's all very bizarre.
Can I just mention, by the way, the NASCAR.com website has had a big makeover. It's very, very good.
It is. It's finally good. It was all. It's always been a little bit too busy, but I do like it now. Yes.
And I also should mention a friend of the programme and of what we do, a guy called Dave Fuller, who has supplied them with their desktop software, which is called Screenser, from Lateral Syncing. Dave and Den, who do that, and they've managed to get that to NASCAR to buy into that, so well done to them. Well done to them. What else is coming out of the US at the moment, Dex?
Oh, well, lots of interesting things coming out of the DEI organisation. It's like a soap opera. It really is. We are expecting that sometime today. In fact, it's probably already happened. We're expecting that the important people and the people who matter at DEI, except Theresa, obviously, because she doesn't get seemingly she doesn't get involved in anything that happens at DEI.
She'd go to that lunch.
For 47 seconds.
Yeah, I think she's actually hiding behind a curtain at DEI as we speak. they will be sitting down, and we talked about this. We've talked about this about 5 weeks ago. We talked about it again 3 weeks after that. We talked about it again last week. But it does look like the first major talks are beginning this week with regards to Junior's contract. Mm-hmm. And I think the stumbling block is basically he's looking for a larger stake in the organisation. Mm. He basically wants more of his dad's company. Now, the interesting thing is a lovely quote, if I can find it. Dale Jr.'s sister, Kelly Earnhardt Elledge, is his business manager. Mm-hmm. And so they will be sitting down with DEI competition director Richie Gilmore. And DEI has a new president, Max Siegel, and they'll be all sitting down. Possibly they could even be sitting down as we speak. Theresa will be nowhere to be seen. Gilmore said the parties wanted to try and keep emotions to a minimum, and they wanted to keep Theresa Earnhardt and Dale Jr. separate. Read into that what you will.
Oh, I think we can read a lot into that, don't you?
This is just such a fascinating... It's like, she clearly... They obviously can't stand the sight of each other. It's one of the reasons she doesn't go to the track.
Well, a marriage or a partnership, should I say, made in heaven. No, I mean, that's just a great way to run a team, isn't it? Not.
I think as well, you always get the impression that Theresa is so very private. She doesn't seem to confide in anybody in the press, so you never get anything leaked or any, you know, anything from. We never really hear her side of the story unless we occasionally have to at the odd press conference that she has to attend grudgingly. So it's very difficult to know precisely what's going on. It's you know, fair play to DEI. In many ways, they keep a lot of it in-house and we don't really know. But they're clearly going to re-sign Junior for next year and the year after. But that's fascinating that the organisation is clearly dysfunctional from the very top to the very key component, i.e. Dale Jr., which always makes me think that your prediction of him going to win the next Dale Cup is somewhat unlikely, if not laughable.
He's got to go to another team, mate. He's got to go to another team.
I think he's... If he, you're absolutely right. We've said it.
He will
times.
Never be successful till he goes to another team. Tim, what you got?
I'm just looking at this new NASCAR.com website, and the main story on there at the moment is something which is going to go right over the heads of anyone in America watching, certainly anyone below or in the deep south, because it's a wonderful beginning, which is about Juan Pablo Montoya. It's just crazy. Declan.
Well, ESPN are actually beginning to ramp up their coverage very heavily across all of their different disciplines, because he was on the front page, very large picture of him on the front page of ESPN.com on Monday.
Well, on the subject of coverage, have you seen who TNT are going to bring in as to their commentary team for their races?
I was going to come to that. TNT are in the extraordinary position of they've signed Carl Petty.
Yes.
To commentate. He's going to do several races for them towards the end of the after Fox get out of their coverage around sort of the middle of the summer when the baseball kicks in, and Fox basically do the first, I haven't off the top of my head, I think it's 24 races or 26 races, something like that. The late Benny Parsons obviously was a crucial part of TNT and NBC's coverage. Carl Petty is going to join them in the commentary box for most of their I believe six races. Except for one of the races, which he will be in the commentary box while at the same time competing.
Oh, fantastic!
He will be compete. He will be.
What, he's going to compete in a NASCAR Nextel Cup race in a commentary box? That's phenomenal.
Car of tomorrow, John. Car of tomorrow.
Car of tomorrow. Now, clearly,
only marginally less aerodynamic than the Car of Tomorrow, but.
So clearly, fans understating commentary box capers will be signed straight. Capers spelt with a K, obviously. Work the acronym out yourself. The website will be started immediately to talk about that.
no more acronyms, John. Declan, what's Jimmy Johnson been up to this week?
I have no idea.
He went to see the president.
Oh, sorry, I did know that. Yeah, I just
the president of the
stories.
United States.
Yes,
not the president of Hendrix, obviously, or Lowe's.
No. Yeah. Portus, the man at the top.
He gave him a signed helmet to go with the one that Sam Hornish Jr. gave him last year after he won the Indy 500. I wonder if he gets to keep them, or do future presidents have to, you know, do they have a cabinet full of them in the
They have
the
to declare house? Them, don't they? And they probably end up in some memorial museum or library that gets built to commemorate their presidency.
It's pretty ironic that George W. Bush at some stage in the future will have a commemorative library, unless it's full of colouring books, but that's another story.
Apparently he's going to try and race it in NASCAR, the commemorative library of tomorrow. Which then will become... No, let's not do any acronyms for anything with commemorative starting it.
Yeah. And tomorrow finishing it.
Yes, well, that's exactly where I was going.
Yeah, creativity, can we now? Nouse, and anyway, never mind.
Yes.
Can we now wrap this up and say that's the end of the American news? Globecast
Radio. News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Before we get any libel actions or anything like that.
That time of the week again here on Midweek Motorsport for our famous, near infamous panel show, Call My Huff. The Huffmeister is Tim Greer. He's with us this week. And Tim, you can, I think you should introduce our very special celebrity member of the motorsport journalistic fraternity.
Well, this week, and stupidly, I've forgotten to ask him where he is, but it is Andrew Cotton.
I'm in Ickleford.
In Ickleford. In Andrew from Ickleford.
Andrew,
we'll write that
Ickle-
down on the whiteboard.
Absolutely right. Now, Andrew, unlike most of our victims, guests on contestants on Call My Hoof, has actually boned up on this a little bit. So he does know a little bit about what's going to be going on. But Tim...
I think that's stretching it a bit there, John.
Okay. Tim Greer, the Hoofmeister there, basically this all came about because of some strange names in one or two of the championships that we were covering, or at least reading out the press releases from. The stranger the names, the more likely they were to be read out on our news section. And we were particularly impressed by people with names like Philippe Albuquerque.
Albuquerque.
And now A1GP driver, although then he wasn't, he was a mere single-seater driver, but he's graduated, and that of course is hoping... Tongue. So from that, we decided to ask you, the listener, to email studio at 0157.org your silly names of racing drivers. And we, Tim, were inundated with people emailing in.
We certainly were.
And from that came Call My Hoof. So, Andrew, Tim has eight names, and it's important to remember that all of these people are or were real people. Nothing is made up.
I can tell you that one out of eight people is no longer with us this week.
So seven real people and one who was a real person and who has now drawn the curtain and gone to join the choir in vestibule. Okay. All you have to do is correctly identify whether they are driver or not a driver. And Tim, you have got the leaderboard with you there in the studio in London.
Indeed I do, yes. At the moment, the current leader with 7 out of 8, the best we've had so far, was Jeremy Shaw, who scored...
Jeremy from Irvine.
7 with the letter
California.
F. In joint second, we have 4 contestants, Declan Brennan and Simon Hill, Charles Dressing and Innes Marlowe, all of them in joint second on 6 points. In joint 6th place with 5 points, Martin Haven and Henry Hope Frost. Then we have John Hindhoff, who is in 8th place on 4 points.
Thank you.
And then
thank you.
Joint last, Nick Damon and Alan Hyde.
Yes. I think I know which end of the table I'm going to finish up, but we'll give it a whirl anyway.
You missed from there Graham Goodwin. Where's Graham Goodwin from Daily Sports Card?
He's 9th with 3 points, yes.
He's 9th with 3, okay.
Now, and I did promise to Graham that I wouldn't mention this again, but... I lied, Graham, if you are listening, I'm sorry. he did manage not to know that Scooter Gable was a racing driver. Not a racing driver, he said. And last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, Scooter Gable did what? He won the GT category at Daytona. Now, some people may not call that racing, but he's got the Rolex watch. And ask Alan McNish, he'd like to have one of those. So, are you comfortable then? Where do you think you're going to come, Andrew?
I'm going to go for the record. I'm confident. Mr. Hyde, I'm coming after you.
Pick a number between 1 and 8 then, Andrew.
Firstly, two things to point out. First of all, we're on the letter M today.
Alright, so
and
all the names are M, yes.
M for McNish. Although he won't be... He won't
does
be
he count?
He doesn't know.
I don't think he appears, no.
Mm.
No. And secondly... be aware that this is not a 50-50 split. We don't necessarily have...
Good point.
..four racing drivers and 4 non-racing drivers. There could be 8 racing drivers and no non-racing drivers, or any...
Or vice versa.
Any variation in between.
Right. A number from you, Andrew, please, to kick this off.
9.
Number... That's 1-8, you...
I'll go with 8.
Number 8, then, is... Girolamo Maggi.
Girolamo Maggi. Is that M-A-G-G-I, is it?
It is, yes.
Right. Girolamo Maggi. Sounds Italian to me, but what do I know? But we don't want to know where he's from, Andrew. We want to know if he is or is not a racing driver. Racing driver or not a racing driver?
I reckon he is a racing driver. I don't know why I'm not basing this on any fact or prior knowledge, but he sounds like he should be.
Maybe he would have been had he still been alive. Unfortunately,
oh,
he died on the 27th of March, 1572.
So, not likely to be a racing driver then, Tim. What was he famous for?
He was a jurist, scholar, poet, military engineer, urban planner, philologist, archaeologist, mathematician and naturalist. And he studied at the University of Bologna.
And was Maggiore, by any chance, named after him?
No.
Okay.
Nor was Maggi the Swiss food multiples company.
All for one, as the our friends across the Atlantic would say. Andrew, another number between one and now seven, please.
Six.
Number six. Endolantha malagumua.
Endolantha magu... Say that
Delantha
again.
Malagamua.
Malagamua.
Malagamua. My word.
Is that some? Is that an African name somewhere in the subcontinent? Something
I was
going like
to say,
that?
It sounds like an African Formula 3 driver.
It's not African. He's from Sri Lanka.
Okay. Lankan then? Okay.
Yep,
Sri Lankan touring car driver, do we think? What? Driver or not a driver?
Driver.
Oh! You're not going to go away with no points, Andrew Cotton. Do you know what he drives? Any idea?
No.
He's had a very long and illustrious career. He started actually doing bike racing, but switched to cars in 1990 when he took part in the Japanese Toyota Corolla Cup.
Oh!
Then in 1994 he switched to single seaters. He did a bit of Japanese F3, bit of Formula Nippon. 1999 he switched to the Japanese GT series. He's also done Grand
Am. He's driven everything in Japan.
Grand Am, and most recently he's been in the Carrera Cup Asia.
Ah,
very good.
Another number, please.
Four.
Number four, Tim. Please.
Let me just put a tick by that.
So yes, make absolutely.
Sure I've got one.
Number four.
Yeah.
Olaf Moll.
M-O-L, is that?
Yes.
Olaf Moll.
Olaf Moll.
Sounds vaguely Scandinavian somewhere.
Yeah.
But don't forget, none of these are rally drivers. It's all circuit racing. If they are a driver, it's circuit racing, okay?
I've got a nasty feeling I've heard of him, but it might not have anything to do with racing. But I'll say that he's a driver.
This is quite a contentious one.
All right. Right.
He has done one race in the Porsche Super Cup. But
nah,
he was there. He was there as a celebrity.
Does that count?
That's not as a celebrity.
Ah, no, but he raced.
What does he do in real life?
I think he participated. I don't think he actually raced. in real life, he's a TV commentator in Belgium.
Now I'm torn.
But that's
there.
Why you've heard of him, because you've probably
you
sat on planes.
You've seen his name somewhere or sat next to him. Yes.
Well, yeah, maybe. So well, I'm going to give myself a tick for that one.
Shall we give him a tick for that, John?
Yes.
I'd have been more impressed if he could have told me he'd race in the Super Cup. We're going to put that one in brackets, right? If it breaks a tie, we'll have to go to the adjudicators. But okay,
it
for the moment,
who it breaks a tie with.
Okay, fine. I can already hear the howls of derision coming in from Hyde, Marlowe, and
yes,
and also
from
Graham Goodwin
direction.
Yes, absolutely. Another number, please, Andrew.
Number two.
Number two.
Number two. Thomas Mutch.
M-U-T-C-H.
Correct.
Thomas with an just T O M A S. Is that not a,
he's got an H in it?
All right, so it is sort of European-y style. Thomas Mutch.
I'm going to say he's not a driver.
And you'd be wrong, because he was the third place driver in the Formula Koenig Championship in 2003.
Right.
The Formula what?
Formula Koenig.
With an umlaut.
With an umlaut.
Okay.
German
so
for king.
That's two stroke, possibly one still, as we ask for another number from Andrew Cotton.
Number seven.
Number seven. Milan Maderic.
Milan Maderic.
How are we spelling that, Tim? Maderic?
M-A-D-E-R-R-Y-C.
Maderic. Maderic?
Is he Russian?
Is that South African?
He's from the Czech Republic.
Ah.
Ah.
Yes,
ah,
he's
well.
A driver.
He's a driver, says Andrew Cotton, and he is right. You were confident there, mate. Have you heard of him?
No, I wasn't.
You were just bluffing, weren't you?
My wife said, appear confident at all times.
I think.
And then
in a quiz
like this, well, you're going to fall flat on your face anyway, so I'm going to give it a whirl.
As soon as we said he was from the Czech Republic, you recognised
him. He did jump in rather
again.
Quickly
yes.
There, yes, yes.
And so what should have done, because he did race in the European Le Mans Series and the FIA GT Championship.
That could have been your Scooter Gable there if you hadn't been onto that. Who did you share the car with?
With Thomas Enger.
Excellent.
One of the heroes.
And, another number, please.
And she also raced in the Skoda Octavia Cup.
Number five.
Well, yeah, it's brave of them. Number five.
Rock Mass.
Rock, what? R-O-C-K?
No, Rock is R-O-C, Mass is M-A-S.
Rock Mass. It sounds like one of those names that you got on dodgy driving games in the 1980s that you played on your Sinclair ZX81 or whatever it was.
Maybe we did.
Rock Mass. No. Driver or not a driver, Andrew?
No, he can't be.
He races in the Spanish Formula 3 Championship.
Oh, well, he is then. Never mind.
Oh, dear.
How are we doing? Well, I'm level with Mr. Goodwin.
You've got three or two.
But you have
two
chances left.
Yes, come on. Two more.
Right,
two
number
more
one.
Number one. Raphael Morgenstern.
Yeah, so you thought he was going to say Raphael Matos, didn't you? Morgenstern, right? He is a driver. Do you know what he drives in, Andrew?
No.
Tim?
He was the champion, in fact, of the Argentinian Formula Renault series in 2002.
I'm surprised you haven't heard of him.
The best Argentinian name I heard was Brian Smith.
that was a fantastic name, yes.
He was brilliant.
He did Formula 3000, of course.
So
that people will know him.
Would know, Tim, because you're a gnome for the minor single-seater series. That's 3-2 on the handicapping system, and a chance for one more point.
No, 3 or 4.
No, I've got 4.
Three or four, sorry, yes, absolutely right.
Well, I'm level with you, so I can see why you're hedging with this.
You've got a chance to go above the halfway point here, Andrew.
Which level with Henry Hope Frost and Martin Haven.
Two, you know, colossus in the motorsport journalism world. And the final number, Tim, is?
The final number will be number 3.
And the driver or not driver is?
Is Rino Mastronardi.
Great name.
Yeah, he's a driver. Oh, fantastic.
Oh, Cotton starts badly, comes back well.
Oh.
What is he driving, Tim?
He started his career in the Italian Formula Europa Boxer Championship in 1994.
Of course he did.
I knew that.
He's done Formula Renault Euro Cup, and then he moved to the States, did Barber Dodge for two seasons, and Formula Atlantic.
Oh, there you are. I'm
Andrew,
very disappointed, actually. Mr. Hyde, oh, dear. What am I going to do?
Well, I'm impressed. More than half points on this is a considerable achievement. Hasn't put you in the top half of the leaderboard, but a creditable performance with 5 out of 8. Andrew Cotton, thank you very much for joining us tonight on Call My Huff.
I'm going to go and have a glass of wine now.
I would do that. Another victim on Call My Huff on Midweek Motorsport next week, when the letter will be N. By this time next week, we'll have had the Budge shootout, so it seems entirely proper that next week's show should be our Nextel Cup special, 8 o'clock for the first airing live from London on Midweek Motorsport next week. That's it for this week. Get your emails in, please. Plenty to talk about from tonight's show. studio@0157.org. Thank you to Declan Brennan, to Nick Damon, to the rest of our guests, and of course to Tim in the studio in London. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, John.
And bye for now.
Goodbye.